Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. My guest in this episode of the Sustainable Finance Podcast was the youngest CEO in Nepal's financial sector when he founded NIMB Ace Capital, one of the country's first investment banks. Today, the bank provides corporate, bond, and equity financing, as well as portfolio advisory and investment services for over 600,000 clients. CEO Shivant Pandey began his banking career in 2007, working for Nepal Investment Bank, where he established that firm's microfinance, capital markets, and financial outreach programs. He is also the co-founder and current chairman of M Nepal, a social venture initiated to facilitate banks and microfinance companies in extending outreach of financial products to the unbanked, poor, urban, and rural populations in Nepal. Hello, Shivant, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
Hi, Paul. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Sustainable Finance Podcast. Hello from Nepal.
Yes. Well, listen, we're very glad that you joined us today, and we're going to jump right into the topic here. Tell us and our followers what sustainable finance means in the context of Nepal's financial services industry and economy today.
Great question. Nepal is a LDC, least developed country, according to the UN World Bank metrics. And we're trying to graduate from that, and we've done a great job. But to understand that, Paul, you have to understand that we were a closed economy till the 1950s and a monarchy till the 1990s. And it was after 1990 when we got democracy that finally there was a little bit of economic liberalization. The first private sector commercial banks opened up. And I think from there, Nepal actually really started to grow in terms of GDP and economic output. So just want to remind everybody that our journey has been very brief. It's barely been, 30, 35 years. And within that, we faced a lot of challenges along the way. In the 1990s, we had a civil war, which led to a political peace process. And, it took 10 years to then form a constitution. So there was a lot of, political instability. Around the same time, we had our earthquake, which was, a big hit on the economy, a big hit on, the social fabric of Nepal, but which we proved to be really resilient from. And, from the earthquake, we've just grown in terms of, building back better, building back more sustainably. And, within the last 20 years, we have achieved energy independence. So for me, what does sustainable finance mean? In our country, it means for us primarily at this moment, being able to fund our own projects and to grow our own economy. And this is a great milestone and achievement for the Nepalese economy, the banks, and investors here. But, right now, we still have a challenge because we faced a recession. We went through COVID, which was another economic global shock. So, sustainable financing now kind of takes on a different meaning because we kind of have spent our funds. We always need new funds to grow more. And we face this, incredible threat called climate change. You might know Nepal houses a lot of the Himalayas, and the Himalayas are, the third pole. And it's also where we've been seeing very drastic, climate change ourselves in terms of dealing with, financing energy-related projects. So, for me, obviously we look at, the UN SDGs. We look at, green financing and other things. But primarily, for us, we've been sustainable in terms of, being able to fund our own growth. And now to enhance it, we need to tap into different funds. And for Nepal, one of the challenges is to get foreign loans. So because of this, money from, multilaterals, development finance institutions has been very critical in terms of, giving a boost to certain sectors and to, grow our economy in general.
Okay, so you just mentioned loans. Let's talk about loans in the context of loans versus investment in your economy. What's a more sustainable funding mechanism for the Nepalese market and why?
So primarily our growth has come from commercial bank loans. But, you know, Nepal has some legal structural regulatory problems, like we don't have bankruptcy laws, etc. So a lot of our loans are heavily collateralized, right? Up to maybe, 50% collateral or more. Or we operate on personal guarantees, which can be very, burdensome. So, but that still has driven, economic growth here. By and large, that is the main instrument. In terms of our government, our government takes loans from, from the ADB, from the World Bank, and from other nations. But we've been lucky that, our many successive governments have all been very prudent in terms of taking foreign loans. So our actually government GDP to debt ratio is very low. It's one of the lowest among all the developing, or LDC countries. But that is also a burden because the government is not, in a way, borrowing efficiently. It just got a credit rating, which is a B- from Fitch. So this is a start for us to actually get loans for, banks or the private sector, because till now, the cost of currency hedging was killing the whole notion of taking a loan, because the cost of taking a loan from abroad, a US dollar loan, was higher than taking a loan in Nepal. For that reason, commercial banks here, actually, because they fund loans to other businesses, but they notably have grown on bond-based financing. So that's where the institution where I currently work has actually come in and, played, I think, quite a critical role in terms of Nepal's, debt market. We've issued quite a lot of, bonds for different commercial banks. And we've also listed a lot of companies to enter into the, equity markets and then, tap into different sources of financing. And concurrently, because of the financial sector all entering, being forced to enter into the equity markets, investors have, really preferred to invest in the stock market here. And it's kind of tremendous because we have over 6 million investors in the Nepali stock market. It's a very vibrant stock market. Everything has gone from paper-based to electronic. And, we have some really good systems. And, so the institution where I work in, its parent company is a commercial bank. But we just got the license last year to open a brokering unit. And, so I see a lot of support coming from within Nepal. And this is a great culture. And this is another aspect of, sustainability as we see it in Nepal.
Now, what are some examples? You've mentioned a couple of things already. Give us a couple of other examples of viable financial instruments that can help the Nepalese business ecosystem thrive over time.
So, being in the capital market space, we've issued about 24 billion Nepalese rupees worth of bonds for the state-owned agriculture development bank. This money goes into their tier one capital, which then allows them to, maybe about 5 to 8 full times lend out money in for farmers in Nepal. So of that money that we raised, which is 24 billion, 18 billion has already been, dispersed. And 6 billion, that they're waiting to disperse and not going into the multiplier effect that their loan book will now get from this additional capital. Similarly, we are in talks with the infrastructure bank here called NIFRA to maybe issue energy bonds to local power producers. We had a very interesting program where we were discussing with a program that was funded by USAID called USAID Urja Nepal, and Urja stands for energy. The program was focused on, helping to guarantee and issue bonds for independent power producers as well in Nepal. Unfortunately, that program just recently got canceled, but we hope that it can, this program can still be uptaken by maybe other DFIs or, we can maybe go for it ourselves with other local partners. Apart from that, we achieved energy self-sufficiency because of two reasons. One was forced lending for commercial banks into critical sectors, such as agriculture and energy. So there's a certain percentage of our loans have to be given there at a certain rate, which is sustainable. It's a 5% interest, so or 4% right now. So, you know, it's a very good rate. And I think that's a very sustainable kind of product that the central bank has implemented here in Nepal. And I mentioned earlier, you know, commercial banks have used bonds, and they're always subscribed to. So, you know, that instrument has been very, very successful. But now, in the last 3 years or so, 3-4 years, we've seen a lot of investment companies and private equity funds, which are licensed from the Securities Board, enter the Nepali market with substantial liquid funds, which are very different from, you know, the bond or the loan structures, because these are pure, you know, equity investments into companies, so, private equity nature. And I think this has really changed the kind of ecosystem here, because of these investments, a lot of the companies that are getting equity are now listing in the stock market, and actually, you know, the diversity of investments there as well.
So you're broadening the base, it sounds like, using both bonds and equity investments, and you're able to borrow money more. I've heard that in many developing economies, the cost of borrowing is extremely high. But it sounds like the rates that you're getting through the Nepalese banks are attractive. How's that happening?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, at one point we had hundreds and hundreds of institutions. But what happened was the central bank over the last 5 years, they made a forced merger policy. So we saw, you know, a lot. So we have microfinance sector, we have finance companies, we have development banks and commercial banks. So we've seen a lot of consolidation and as a result, stronger institutions coming up. And because of that, you know, before, you know, banks used to compete to attract deposits and, you know, we used to offer 10, 12% fixed deposit rates. So the cascading effect on lending was very high. But because the banks have consolidated, the deposit rates have come down, and that has actually made loan rates much more viable. So that's one of the reasons why. The other reason is it's good and bad. It's because of the structure of our economy. So Nepal is a migrant labor-driven economy. So we have millions of people, young Nepalese. So we're also, you know, population demographic is, you know, a lot of young people. So I'm 43, 60% of Nepal is younger than me. So, you know, you can get a glimpse of how young that is. And, you know, a lot of them are migrating or work abroad and remit money. And that has kept Nepal very stable in terms of, you know, source of funding. And that's all dollar and, you know, different currencies. So that has helped tremendously, but it comes with its own volatility and dependence on that kind of labor stream. So as a result, you know, we see agriculture sector not taking off. We see the manufacturing sector not taking off. We see our economy being almost 90% import driven. So all the money that we're getting from, you know, remittance migrant labor is actually going out to buy goods and services. But therein lies a huge opportunity to, you know, do local manufacturing. And you know, kickstart the whole, you know, kind of industrial base here in a very, you know, modern way.
All right. So now we're talking about investing in Nepal. And as an investor yourself, what sectors would you particularly bank on and invest in today in Nepal?
So, you know, my family has always been invested in Nepal. My father helped to start. Well, he started the first private bank in Nepal, private sector commercial bank in Nepal. And, you know, we have been invested in Nepal in the economy. So for us, you know, the success of commercial banking led us to expand into, you know, capital markets, mutual funds, and now private equity. At the same time, you know, we have also invested in energy here, real estate, and hospitality. So these are, you know, core investments that we have done a bit differently from where I work today. But again, in terms of my newly launched private equity business, you know, we have made investments in energy, manufacturing, agriculture, hospitality, the fast-moving consumer goods, and we're also looking at significant investments in tech and fintech. which is another, you know, booming sector because of our young population. So yes, I think, you know, in terms of opportunity in manufacturing and fast-moving consumer goods for Nepalese population, is there because everything is being imported. So we have this kind of focus on, you know, how can we help with import substitution and, you know, job creation here? The agriculture sector is, you know, very nascent. So, you know, there's a lot of opportunity, but, you know, a lot of the old challenges have now been mitigated. There are road networks everywhere. Access to market is better. You know, funding into these sectors have now been, you know, driven by regulations. So they're looking good. Energy, as I mentioned earlier, we're now self-sufficient. And, you know, we used to have huge, you know, 16-hour blackouts maybe 10, 15 years ago. And now we're selling energy to India. So that's a, you know, great story right there. And yeah, so, you know, hospitality, everybody knows Nepal, you know, the Himalayas. And, you know, we're finally getting our travel infrastructure, our airports. We have, you know, 3 international airports now, different regional airports. So yeah, it's looking good.
Oh, this is great news. I'm really glad to hear these sectors of the economy are growing fast. Now, tell us about your experience as a change maker in Nepal. How has your experience of working outside of the country and now back inside Nepal for a number of years, how has that helped to shape your ideas on banking and financial services?
So, you know, the school I went to in Nepal, it was actually started by the British government at that time under the request of the king. And, you know, I think a lot of my upbringing and you know, mindset kind of comes from going to that school, because the notion of that school was to get, you know, students from every district of Nepal and educate them together. Right? So, you know, started in the fourth grade and till my O levels, I studied in where I went to school in Kathmandu, Nepal. And, you know, just being educated with people from all over Nepal, from different backgrounds, you know, was very, you know, formative. And that also, you know, made you want to kind of, you know, well, made you understand about the country, you know, about what people from the country are about. But also everybody there had this, you know, kind of burning kind of a, you know, commitment to help develop Nepal, because in the 90s, when we were young, it was a very, very poor country. So then after that, I got a very good opportunity to study in a United World College, which was, again, another multicultural education experience. So I went to the United World College of USA, where my classmates were from 80 different countries around the world. And we did the International Baccalaureate, which was also a very good course. And, you know, it was very formative in the sense that, you know, it was all about, you know, social contribution. Part of your curriculum is based on, you know, volunteer work and, you know, things outside just core education. So these things obviously shaped me a lot. And then, you know, being invested in Nepal through the family business, you know, it was always about, you know, how do you learn? And I studied economics and later, you know, financial economics. So I was always interested in, you know, helping to come back and, you know, kind of help in banking, help in economics and, you know, finance in the country. So, you know, when I graduated, I worked 2 years in London in this company called Deloitte and Touche Emerging Markets Group. So there was an arm, small offshoot of Deloitte that actually dealt with, you know, DFID, USAID and EU contracts for the developing world, primarily in terms of designing programs and then also sometimes bidding on them. And so I got a good, you know, introduction into the development finance world from 2 years in London. And then I moved back to Nepal and I started as a management trainee in the bank. And a few years later, I helped to start the first research and development department of any bank at the time. From there, we, you know, kind of ideated a few projects. One was MNepal, which was, you know, concentrated around fintech, which was quite a journey. But fintech, I mean, it went up and down, and today it's actually, you know, non-functional. But what we did there, we've transported into the bank. So we have wallets, we have omnichannel banking as a result of that. And then we set up the capital markets unit, and that has been a journey in itself over the last 12 years. We started with, you know, you know, just IPOs and bond issues, and everything was paper based. So if we had, you know, any IPO, we'd be oversubscribed by, you know, 20, 30 times. So say, you know, we get like 20, 30, 40,000 applicants for, you know, participating in any issue, which ended up with a very bizarre situation where you had to do a lottery and allocate units to people. So, you know, we were oversubscribed like crazy. And then, you know, to process that would take time. It would take like, you know, 50, 60 people just, you know, punching in numbers and doing this manually. And then we had this journey where everything went from a paper-based to electronic format. And now everything is, you know, just through apps and, you know, everything is through central databases. And that has really, you know, increased the efficiency and pricing of our products and obviously the uptake. So, yeah, it's been quite a journey. And, you know, our recent ventures have been mutual funds. And we successfully retired a five-year fund 2 years ago, which averaged about 17.5%. And still through recessions, good and bad, our mutual funds have averaged around 13.5%, making, I think, mutual funds one of the leading instruments in Nepal. And now we've, you know, started on the private equity investment space, which is, again, very exciting because you get to meet, you know, young people, you know, different types of people doing very innovative and, you know, successful things who are, you know, very hardworking and driven. And that is very satisfying.
Listen, those are great annualized rates of return for your mutual fund investments. And of course, today, everyone is focused more or less on climate resilience and clean energy financing as well, because that's what we need a lot more of right now, right? So how are you and other financiers in Nepal going about reducing CO2 pollution impact, especially in the Himalayan glaciers? I know that that's a very delicate subject, and it's also one of the greatest needs that you have as a country, right?
Sure. So I think twofold. A, because, you know, of our forced lending into the energy sector, that has increased the pot of loanable funds, and that's, you know, just enabled, you know, maybe 300-400 projects to take off. Actually, the other instrument, which I was trying to mention earlier, but I left it out, the real reason that, you know, energy has been possible in Nepal is because of one policy, again, made by the government, which proved to be a game changer. So about 12 years ago, the government mandated that any hydropower project, and obviously most of our energy is clean, right? We don't burn coal. We import electricity from India, or we, you know, produce it through hydropower and primarily run-of-the-river hydropower, which is cleaner. So the law introduced was every project has to give a local IPO of at least 5% for the local population of you know, or the districts of any project. Now, from any project being, you know, kind of hounded by the locals and you know, or local populations, or being shunned, it became like, okay, we are now welcoming this project. Please bring it as soon as possible. And where we come in is we are actually the one, you know, one of the few companies that go in and run the local IPOs. And, you know, we've seen people even borrow from you know, banks and invest in these projects. And these are, you know, locals, villagers, you know, very, very, you know, interesting story to tell. And after this policy, no project was opposed, and, you know, the sector just took off.
Wow. Well, listen, it's great that the population is taking to those investments. It sounds like they're focusing on it for the long term. And we're really excited to have had you as our guest on today's program, Shivan. Tell our followers where online they can go to learn more about NIMB Ace Capital and how they can contact you for more information about the topics that we have discussed in this episode.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's been really interesting to talk to you and to share, you know, about what's been going on in Nepal and, you know, what kind of, you know, sustainable or inclusive finance has been doing here. And, you know, just, I think the tip of the iceberg and what we got to discuss, because a lot of things are yet to happen or happening as we speak. So, yeah, maybe in a future date, we can update you on, you know, how, you know, different funds are coming in. So one I just like to mention is there's an initiative called the Green Climate Fund, GCF, which is a significant pool of money. And our parent bank is the only bank in Nepal that's been accredited with the GCF funding mechanism. It took about 2.5-3 years to be accredited. And you know, now we are developing a pipeline of investable projects for the GCF board to review for Nepal. So maybe, you know, out of that, maybe $200-300 million from that fund can come to Nepal and different projects here. So yeah, fingers crossed, and let's see what happens.
That's great. I'm familiar with their work, and they are a great organization, and I'm really excited to hear that you are working with them as well. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to have our followers get in touch with you through your systems. If you can give us any websites or links that you can that people can use to go online and learn more about what you're doing at NIMB Ace Capital, we'd appreciate it. And if you have anything that you'd like us to attach to this program, we'd be glad to do that as well.
Sure. We have our website, which is www.nimbacecapital.com.np for Nepal. And yes, we have landing pages there where you can, you know, get in touch with us and contact me. And that'll be great to hear from any of you. Good pleasure.
Terrific. Well, thank you once again very much. Shivan Pandey, CEO at NIMB Ace Capital in Nepal. And we are going to be back next week with another episode. I'm Paul Ellis. I'm your host, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast.